This week's episode of The Boundless Show is sponsored by the New King James Version Unapologetic Study Bible, which is going to equip, encourage, and embolden you to live and share what you believe, solidly grounded in the truth of Scripture. Learn more about it by downloading a free sample at unapologeticbible.com. Boundless Show.
I've discovered that most people are not nearly as committed to my happiness as I am.
Uh-huh.
And when they try and do whatever they do and it messes with me, then it's uncomfortable. And so it brings drama. We like drama when it's past tense or when it involves somebody else.
Well, that is Mike Bechtel, and he is the author of the book, People Can't Drive You Crazy If You Don't Give Them the Keys. I love that title. And he's going to talk to us about navigating relationships with people who are especially difficult for us. And so very appropriate heading into the holiday season when many of us will be with family who sometimes are particularly difficult to love and to get along with. So listen in for that. But I do want to tell you about something special. Remember last year when I gave you the shout to send us Christmas cards to The Boundless Show? We would love for you to do that again because, as I promised last year, every Christmas card that comes to us, you will be prayed for individually by a member of our team. So send your Christmas cards. Here is the address. Send it to My Attention at Boundless, 8605 Explorer Drive, Colorado Springs, Colorado, 80920. Send us your cards, send us your photos. We will pray for you. We would love to hear from you this year. Okay, coming up later on in the show, we have a question from a listener who is in a job, but she has the opportunity to take what she believes may be her dream job. Now, the dream job involves a pay cut. It also could be a little unstable. So is that foolish of her to go for it, or should she take the risk? Fortunately, our director of recruitment, Lisa Ruman, is here to answer from her wealth of experience. But here we are for our roundtable, and we have got a great group of folks in here. We have Diane, Carrie, and John. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Great to have you.
Thanks.
None of you, I'm just going to be honest, because I'm not either. None of you are in your 20s.
Correct.
Which speaks, I mean, just a couple years out, most
right,
of you.
Right, one or two.
Which speaks to the topic of our roundtable today. We're going to actually talk about, we love talking about the holidays here, as we mm-hmm. do. Those of us, you know, many who are single, young adults, whatever, there's a certain amount of dread heading into the holidays because we're like, left behind. We all know what that's like, but this isn't a big gripe session about singles around the holidays. We have talked about that many times. This is actually about what can we do to proactively bless others around the holidays, whatever stage of life they're in, whatever they're going through. How can we as single adults contribute, whether it's in our churches, in our own families, in our friend groups? We want to be there for others as Christ has called us to do. And so, Carrie, you are, I mean, just a little info about all of you. Carrie, you are a single mom of an adopted son who's now 10, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of unique challenges and opportunities
Definitely.
There, for sure.
Yeah.
Diane, you have 2 grown children and 4 grandchildren.
I do.
So you get to be both mom and grandma.
Absolutely.
And you with your husband, Hubster, mentor a lot of young married couples as well. So you know kind of what it's like to cross both divides on that front. And then John Fuller, who's the co-host of our Focus Daily broadcast. But when he's not on The Boundless Show, he does that. And he has 6 kids, 5 of whom are grown, right within our listening audience.
Yeah, at least a couple of them are listeners to Boundless, which is great.
Okay, well, all of them need to be. I'm just saying.
Well, they leave the house. I can't make them do anything anymore, Lisa. Come on.
Get on it. So I want, you know, everyone around the holidays tells single people, you know, don't be lonely, don't be grumpy, don't whatever. But it's kind of hard, you know, to know how to get out of our own selves and our own stories and sadnesses. So you, John, you were married when you were pretty young, right?
Sure. Much younger than I am now. I was about 25.
Okay. 25.
Yeah.
So you kind of crossed through college and into, you know, young adult singleness before.
Yeah. I remember my first major holiday was Thanksgiving.
Okay.
I had moved to Texas. I knew nobody.
Okay.
I literally knew like 5 people at the most, and they were all leaving town for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It was a pretty lonely time.
Okay. Okay.
But we're not here to gripe about
that. We are not here to gripe about that. That's for sure. Carrie, tell us just a little bit of a summary. Like, as you're heading into the holidays, what's that going to look like for you?
Well, I'm not much of a planner, so I hadn't really thought about, oh, this is my first Christmas as a single mom. We'd probably need to make some plans. Thankfully, my parents are here, so I can always crash at their place. But I was single all through my 30s, so, you know, there were a lot of Christmases that were just with family, and I had a good group of friends, so that was really fun. We usually made plans with the friends, but yeah, as a single mom now, I'm trying to figure out, okay, how do I do all the fun Christmas stuff with my son and still do all the decorating and the all the other stuff? And most of it just falls to the wayside, and that's okay too.
And there you go. Yeah. So, all right. Well, and Diane, you must feel responsible for your roles as mother and grandmother and still, you know, walking through the season yet another year. What, anything new you're anticipating this year?
I think because the kids are getting a little bit older, it's also wanting them to be aware of who's around them at church, who they hang out with, who pays attention to them that they know are single, because kids can have a great way of drawing in a single that maybe someone else can't. And so it's just making them aware, hey, you know that they don't have any place to go. You're 9. You can invite them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. My son will definitely do that. He will volunteer. He will invite anybody to anything. So if you need to borrow him.
I don't think so.
I feel like if you're Italian like Diane, you should just naturally be inviting people.
Well,
I
it
mean,
does
isn't that,
happen.
Shouldn't you have your entire neighborhood?
Absolutely. There's always an empty, like there's like a place
setting.
That's
like a special spiritual gift.
Exactly.
Okay, now, there's no Italian blood in my children that I know of, but for Thanksgiving, my 20-something girls invite lots of people. We had 15 people come over, most of whom I knew kind of through coffee shops and things through my children, but they're proactively looking out for ways to pull people into our family's Thanksgiving time. And it's really rich. I'm enjoying that part of their life because they're bringing new people to the table with new stories and new foods. And it's fun.
Well, and that's awesome because they get to be the gatherers, but you get to benefit from, you know, some young faces at the table and get
and
to be.
And they brought food too. So we benefited from that.
That's very good. Okay. So let's flip the tables though and talk about Christmas and talk about what does it look like for you, John, to have young adult children as contributors now, as functioning adults. You're not having to do, you know, I mean, hopefully they are contributors to the festivities and to what, do you have expectations of them for the holidays? What does that look
like? Well, hopefully, as you said, they're going to contribute. I actually don't. Thanksgiving is our big, big holiday with all those people around the table. We had like 25 people. For Christmas, it's usually lower key, so I'm just happy if all the kids come over. And sure, I'd love it if they're proactive and will offer to help mom do some things. And they do put up Christmas decorations. They're part of the Christmas tree hunt that we do every year going up into the mountains. I don't have really high expectations for my own children, except, you know what? If they're going to have an eye out for people at Thanksgiving, it's okay if they do that at Christmas time, too. And maybe we'll have a time when we set aside the afternoon on Christmas Day to say, come on over, and we'll have a little open house or something. I haven't talked to them about that, but something tells me we'll have that conversation because they're going to be doing that.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, it's, I think I've found myself, you know, it's easy as a single person to, I always say you don't have that necessarily the built-in community. So you have to go and find it and you have to be the one to invite or the one to ask questions or the one to, so it's great when we have the opportunity to do that and include others, especially those from different ages and stages and stuff. I think for us, we naturally see that as a benefit, but it's great when it's reciprocated too. And, you know, married peeps ask us questions and whatever. So, all right. Well, Carrie, how about you? You said you have your parents in town.
Yes.
And so there's kind of like a little bit of a, you know, default there. You know that they're, you know that they're going to be around.
I'm still invited. So
right.
As far as I know, I'm still invited. So, yeah.
But what, I mean,
well, if
what
not, my girls will invite
there you.
Yeah,
exactly. Hey, there's a place setting at my table.
I already feel like I'm going to pop over for a few hours. Maybe we'll see.
There you go.
Okay. But tell us what, I mean, obviously different perspective this year, different, you know, logistics, all that. What, I mean, any unique fears or trepidation or whatever heading into the holidays?
I think, you know, for me, it's just trying to kind of stay busy and stay, keep a lot of things going on. So for both of us, for my son and me, that we stay busy and enjoy the holiday season and don't dwell on what's happened in the past, but really still enjoy it. And mm-hmm. and I think, especially with my parents, and my sister is here in town too, and then just friends, that getting connected again with that community will be a big part of it.
Yeah.
So staying busy. And
how would you say, I mean, here's your chance, because here at the Boundless Show, we just put it on the line, really. here's your chance, like, for people who are listening, what would you, if you could just say it, what would most bless you? What would most help you? What would most, because everyone in our audience knows someone who's a single parent, someone in their church, someone who may be forgotten.
Right.
What would be the way that you would want people to pour into you?
You know,
heading into the new year, it doesn't have to just be about Christmas.
Well, again, as a single parent, I was thinking, you know what I need is a babysitter. Mm-hmm. Just take my kid to the movie, take him to the mall, take him somewhere so that I can either get stuff
done
and go
shopping.
Girl, you and me
both. I got my mom.
There you go.
Let's double date it. Okay.
Okay. See, we just need to coordinate. I'll drop off my kid with your mom.
What could go wrong?
Maybe the two of them could just supervise each other.
What could go wrong? It'll be beautiful. So that would be an easy thing, especially if you have nieces and nephews or, you know, other little kids. Gather up a gaggle of them and drag them around the mall.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, Lisa. We still have a 14-year-old in the home, and while our kids are busy, it's nice to be able to have somebody come over to do just what Carrie was saying, to do Christmas shopping, to go to Christmas parties, to do things that are better done just by yourself or with adult company without the, if we can call it this, an encumbrance of a child in his or her needs.
Yeah.
Especially Christmas shopping for them, that you try to hide that, and it's just, you know, it's just coordinating.
Yeah, exactly. Good point.
And take my kid to go shopping for me. Yeah, that would be.
Oh, yeah.
If I can be a little selfish.
You can give them the money.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Right?
Yeah.
And
that's
make sure they pick up something
idea.
Cute, you know.
Yeah. No, that's
macaroni
really...
necklaces are great, but, you know, take them and, that's...
Right, exactly. That's a great... Oh, that's a really great idea. All right, Diane, how about you?
You know, I know a lot of singles don't want to take the time to put up a tree. Or, I mean, why? Why bother?
Yes.
So it is really fun to have them come and help decorate my tree.
Yeah. Yes.
And here's the stuff. I'm not that picky. Just put it where you want and let them be a part of what's going on within the house to decorate, because they're not going to take the time to do that themselves. Mm-hmm. So let's have them over and let's have them decorate my tree.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I had a number of years like that because I knew I was traveling to the Midwest for Christmas. So it was always that, why would I decorate?
Right.
I'm only going to be here a couple of weeks.
Right.
And then, but then it's just sad. You know,
right.
Then you come home from work and you've got a lame-o house with no decorations.
Right.
So it is nice to be included in that and have, or do a little swap where they come over and help with your tree and then you can help them with their tree or
so
just
they're,
something.
They're not decorating alone either.
Manageable.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because they still want the festive feeling.
Definitely.
And so go there and say, hey, I've got a box of stuff. Let me bring it over and let's put it up.
Yeah, that's great. Is it, do you guys see, as you think of like your own churches, is it easy to see single adults around the holidays? Or is it kind of, do you find that most people are just kind of, you know, no pun intended, focused on their families, kind of just trying to survive, like, you know, the commercialism and the crazy and stuff? Or are you seeing more of a move towards people being in one another's lives and cross-generational care and stuff like that?
I think it depends on who your friends are and who your church is.
Yeah.
You know, are you aware of what's going on around you? And do you ask questions? And are you relational?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's hard for those singles who are maybe introverted and they don't want to say anything, but they long for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where someone can step in and say, hey, I need help decorating my tree. Would you be interested in helping us? Because there are people who just won't ask for help and then go home lonely.
Yeah. I think that's why it's so important. I don't know if I can say this as a pitch for small groups in churches, but it is important to have that community, especially as a single person. You need those, your tribe, you know, and sometimes that's a small group that you just click with. But then, you know, even the people who are more introverted or, you know, they won't say much, but you know what's going on in their lives just because they're in that small group. Together.
You know, Lisa, for us, there's a dynamic this Christmas that's hard to deal with, and that is my wife's mom is probably going to be alone. She's in her upper 80s in age, and she can't really do a whole lot. And we're not going to be able to go there to see her. And we'll call and we'll make sure that, you know, she's not forgotten. But it'd be lovely if there was somebody younger that could either as a family or as a single just commit a time to go visit with her and spend a little bit of time with her, because we can't do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are too many logistical issues right now for this year. But I'm thinking it's going to be kind of quiet for her, like really quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody could really bring a smile to her life and maybe benefit from some of the great stories she tells or some of the food that she might cook up, even if she forgets an ingredient or two, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, who needs green beans in a green bean casserole?
Yeah. As long as you got the bacon bits?
Yeah, that's right.
Got it.
Yeah. No, that is a great, great practical example. And it could be, I mean, it could be someone who is elderly. It could be someone else who's just alone because they've moved to a new city and they need to be included in something and they haven't had a chance, like John was saying about his first Thanksgiving, to make friends yet or be really put down roots or whatever. Or it could just be someone who needs practical help. I mean, there are people who are, you know, sick around this time of the year or in the hospital and they can't do the tree by themselves or they can't haul down ornaments. I was just talking to my sister the other day and she and her husband showed up at church to help decorate the church. And it was like none of the young people like showed up. And I'm like, oh, okay, you should have given me their numbers because I would have called them
and said, muscle.
Get on. Yeah. I mean, and so it's just like all these like old precious guys. I mean, not that my brother-in-law's that old, but he's precious. Anyway,
I hear
but
the creaking he's right like, now.
He's like,
he's like 45.
He's like 45. You know, just doing all the heavy labor and stuff. And again, it just makes it such a fun opportunity for people to hang out together. All right. Well, we only have a few minutes left, but I want you guys to be, because I told you several times that we appreciate being very honest here on the Boundless Show. And I always say, listen to people who have wisdom and who have truth to share with you, because if you listen to it and heed it, Proverbs assures us that we will grow in maturity as a result. Okay, so I need to know from you what, and these could be like, I don't care if you share like pet peeves or whatever, but when you think of young adults, whether they're single or not, what is just like, come on now, you guys need, here's my little impression of something that you could maybe improve in, or this is something that, you know, I've just seen that you're kind of, you're prone to, whether it's some kind of behavior or whatever. And then what would you say, give us a couple shining moments where you've really seen young adults step up, whether around the holidays or just doing community well and serving others well.
Now I'm feeling old. When I look, oh, those 20-year-olds. Oh.
Those crazy kids. I do it all the time, Carrie. I'm a Gen Xer, so I feel entitled.
I think that so many people are so self-centered now that it is hard for them to step outside of themselves, or they're not willing, or they don't even have the energy, or they just don't care. And I think when you see people who are like that, that you know have the potential of blessing so many other people, or they're insecure about what they are going through right now, are you willing, actually willing to obey God and just take a baby step? Because it's amazing. God honors our baby steps. Mm-hmm. And God did honor Peter when he stepped out into the water, you know, and yes, he sank, but he stepped out and God grabbed him and pulled him into the boat. And I think it's important for some of our young people to get outside of themselves, away from their electronics, and just say there's more to life than just me and my personal entertainment. And I have seen that in some of the young people, especially the people that I work with, who are willing to go outside of themselves to look for opportunities to help and serve somebody else, even though they may be introverts themselves. They just know, gosh, if that were me, how would I want to be treated? And so I've seen both of those. And I see the blessing that comes with those who are willing to step outside of themselves.
Yeah, that's wisdom. Yeah, I think the electronics, again, people have an entire world online and they think that how many Facebook likes is what's reality. And it's just not. The internet is not the real world. Get out into the real world. Again, get connected with your friends and with other people to get outside. I mean, we're in Colorado, especially. We're so blessed here. So
you know, those Pinterest Christmases are so fake.
Yeah.
And it's like, stop it.
That's exactly what it's like
I'm
in my
sorry.
House.
That's what it's
I'm
like
sorry.
At John's house. Yeah.
Okay,
the rest
John,
of us are...
I don't know what I was thinking for a minute. I blacked out. But it's like, that is not the reality. So put it down And remember, it's about people. You only get to take people with you when we go. Yes. Everything else is left behind.
I'd like to drill in on what Diane is saying there. And just, I think what I missed as a single in my early 20s while I was still living near my family was showing up and honoring my folks by being a part, my more active part in what they were doing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cheesy, but I'm now the dad saying, won't you come over? And could we manage some time for some family games? And we try not to force that because let's all have fun now. We're going to play a board game and we're all going to have fun doing this. But my kids honor me when they show up and hang out.
Right.
And we have a chance to just interact. And I watch them interact with each other. So my encouragement is going to be, hey, Boundless listeners, if you're able to, get together with family.
Yes.
Make that count. And don't short shrift them. Give them some good time and be willing to hang out and get bored. And that's okay.
And just
As we get older, we parents kind of like just sitting around, not forcing it. And I think there's a real benefit to that, that intergenerational connection, especially within the family, that if you can't do it personally, FaceTime in or whatever.
Yeah.
But try to reach out to family members, especially at this time of year. They're going to want to talk to you and hear from you.
And, you know, maybe it's not your parents. Maybe it's that aunt that always showed special attention to you because maybe that mom and dad are not the, they're like the last person you want to spend your holiday with. But you remember, you know, Uncle Guido, and he just, you know, always.
You have stories about
him. I do, and he always gave you a silver dollar. You know, maybe
he'll
still give me one of those.
That's
it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think sometimes it's beyond just your parents. There are other people that could be family members that you have a relationship with.
Yeah. I know it always meant so much to me as a youngest child who grew up as almost an only child when my siblings came and just sat down with me and went through my school projects and talked about my year and, you know, looked at my, you know, gave me a little gift or did whatever. It just made me feel like I was noticed and I was seen by them. So that's cool. Right. My advice would be, whatever invites are coming, whatever is happening, don't sit there and wait until something better comes along. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Respond to invitations. Be open to going to parties. Don't just look out for the thing, kind of what Diane and Carrie were saying. Don't just think about what's best for you. Find out where you can go and contribute and be a blessing to someone. Ask good questions of people and show that you care for them. I think that makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. So, definitely.
You guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You could do radio.
Yeah.
I do once in a while. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Well, hey, everyone, as we launch into our culture segment for this week, you know, I always like to bring authors to you, and sometimes they're people who have written books that I had to read just because of my own life. That's most of them, actually. Today's no exception. I get to introduce you to Mike Bechtel. He is the author of People Can't Drive You Crazy If You Don't Give Them the Keys, which certainly caught my attention. Very fun title. But really, I mean, many of us, when we talk here at the Boundless Show, we do so much on dating and relationships and all that stuff. A lot of people will immediately assume, oh, you know, I need to make sure I date a healthy person or, you know, do X, Y, Z. But our lives are full of relationships. Some of them are ones that, you know, maybe a little more peripheral. Some are very close to us, whether our family of origin or maybe it is someone that you're dating. So everyone out there, think right now of that person in your life who, if you had to pinpoint it, they're the one that drives you crazy. You don't know why, you don't know how, you don't know when it started. It clearly has nothing to do with you because you're awesome. But this person, Mike, I'm so glad you can join us on the show and help us unpack all this nuttiness and what we're going to do about it.
Well, thanks. It's a privilege to be with you.
Well, this is, again, certainly a lot of fun. You simply say, I know your bio talks about, you know, you live among a lot of crazy people in California, but you have done a lot of work, a lot of research on this topic, being experienced in communication, in personalities, personal relations, all that kind of stuff. So I want to actually just kick it off. I asked everyone to think of that person in their life that drives them crazy. Help us understand, Mike, what that looks like. What are the common kinds of crazy? If a person identifies crazy behavior that just drives them nuts, what generally are they talking about? Because it's not just leaving toothpaste caps off and dumb stuff like that. There's more crazy than that in my life, I can tell you right now.
You know, it can be a lot of things, because craziness is anything that's different than what our comfort zone is.
Oh, okay.
So it's almost like you have a thermostat that keeps the temperature right in your house. Mm-hmm. We have that emotionally as well. So we have when nobody's messing with our lives, they're not messing us up, and we feel good, we like the way things are going. And then when somebody else comes along and they do something, it's usually a behavior, and they do something that messes with that set point.
Okay.
That's usually what we call crazy.
Gotcha.
Because it's taking me away. It makes me uncomfortable. And I want to pull that back in.
Yeah. So this is interesting, because I think for, especially since you're talking to mostly single adults, I found this to be historically true. I used to be able to just separate myself from the crazy, because I'm like, if you're driving me crazy, then I will either just bail on the relationship, or I will at least go home to my own house, apartment, whatever, and recover from you. But as you're really trying to live in Christian community, and then ultimately, obviously, when you get married and stuff, sometimes you can't escape it. You need to relate to these people regularly. So, is drama in relationships, is that normal, or is that always a sign of something unhealthy?
No, I think it's normal, because I've discovered that most people are not nearly as committed to my happiness as I am.
Uh-huh.
And when they try, it's
unfortunate.
And, yeah, and they try and do whatever they do, and it messes with me.
Yeah.
Then it's uncomfortable. And so it brings drama. We like drama when it's past tense.
Yeah.
Or when it involves somebody else. Like when we go on vacation, we talk about the things that happen that we barely survived a storm or whatever's going on. We don't talk about reading the newspaper on the patio. And so drama is the kind of thing that we watch on TV. We watch the reality shows.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the one person on Big Brother, Survivor, that is the crazy on there. And we love watching them because it's safe. We're in our living room eating Cheetos, and we don't have to interact with them. But we really don't like talking to those people because it's uncomfortable. We don't know what to say and how they're going to react. And so those are the types of things that fit in there.
Yeah. So how do you differentiate between, like, when you are trying to relate to someone and you're going to, you know, immediately, you know, you're going to label them as, they're just crazy, or this crazy behavior, or whatever. How do you differentiate between, we just really are different people that have different priorities, different personalities, whatever, versus there is actually something here that I need to address, because I will not be able. I mean, it's either sinful behavior, or it's, how do you know the difference?
Yeah, it's a matter of knowing the person well, because there's so many different people. We're all unique.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we look at other people, we tend to interpret their behavior based on our lenses, what we see. We assume that they're thinking the same thing we are. If I was doing that behavior, then obviously that's what I would be doing. So they must be crazy because they're doing it. But they may have whole different reasons, background, the things that have brought them where they are. So it's a matter of understanding, listening to them, talking to them to find out just really what's happening, and not just make assumptions, because it's so easy to do that.
Yeah, that's true. So what if you do get to a spot where, you know, you realize that, okay, I have let this person in my life. This is probably an unhealthy relationship. Like, say there's something where their behavior is, is clearly selfish or sinful in some way. What's your responsibility to point that out? And if they don't you know, don't receive it or don't want to be in conversation with you about that, how many times are you supposed to be pointing this out? Because I think as Christians, we're like, well, I can't bail on the relationship. That's giving up, or that's saying that God can't work, or that's saying we like spiritualize everything. But what's our responsibility to
I think it's really good. We do tend to spiritualize it because, well, of course, we have to love them. We have to care for them. It's true. But that doesn't mean we have to stay in that kind of a relationship if it's unhealthy. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of a three-step process. First, can I change the situation? Mm-hmm. Can I change what they're doing? Mm-hmm. I can talk to them. I can reason with them. I can try and influence them and see if we can. And that's usually the first step, talking to them, see if we can do it. But it's really hard to change somebody else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard enough to change ourselves. Think how our habits are ingrained. We try and change things. We try and change our attitudes. It's hard enough to do it on our own, but to do it to somebody else, it gets a little crazy. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably the first step. Can I change anything? I work with them. I talk to them. Have those careful conversations in a non-threatening way. If it gets to a point where I realize they're not going to change, that is who they are, then I go to step two, which is, can I change my attitude? Hmm. If I can't change them, really the only person I have control over is me. So can I change my attitude, my response? Can I live with this the way it is? If it gets to a point where it's so painful that I have trouble doing that, then it may be step three, time to change the environment, where I'm not pursuing that relationship, or I may need to break it off, depending on what it is. Now, in a family situation, a marriage situation, it's a little different. Mm-hmm. I mean, family is like swimming with sharks. Mm-hmm. You know that there's more dynamics going on under the water than you want to think about, but they can impact you more than a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. So, but that's the process we go through, is try and change the person, try and talk to them, influence them. If that doesn't work, then can I change myself? Because that's really the only person we have control over. Mm-hmm. If it gets out of control, I may need to change my relationship with them.
Yeah. I think it's so easy to, especially in that kind of situation, whether it's a friend or family member, I've been here where I'm trying to have this conversation. And of course, just personality wise, I'm super logical. So I think if I just lay everything out on the table, they'll look at it and be like, oh my goodness, that makes so much sense. Let me just change.
How's that work for you?
It hasn't. And so that's why I get so frustrated. I'm like, it's right here. Please look and realize how your behavior is affecting other people. But then when I don't see change and they're assuming, for example, okay, well, I don't want to change. You have to accept me as I am, but let's just act like, you know, we're good and it's just normal and stuff. I think that's, Mike, where I feel like, what is my responsibility as a Christian, as a sister in Christ, as a person who's in relationship with this person, to love them, but also have healthy boundaries? How do you walk out the practicality of those steps?
Well, I think the boundaries is the practical term.
Yeah.
That's how we do it with certain people. It's so easy to have ourselves spread thin. There's mm-hmm. so many relationships and we only have so much time to give. Mm-hmm. And so the closer I am to a person, the more, if they're family, a spouse, whatever, they deserve more of my energy and time. But there's a lot of people that are trying to draw from me. Mm-hmm. And so in a sense, I'm kind of triaging that. Mm-hmm. I can still care about them, but that doesn't mean I need to be heavily involved in their life.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like Jesus with his disciples. I mean, he spoke to the crowds of thousands, but then he had the 70 and then he had the 12. And of the 12, he had the 3 that he poured his life into. Mm-hmm. And he desperately cared about all of those, but he put his energy into certain people and he changed the world with it.
Hmm. So, I mean, we have been very good at, you know, here in this interview, and I am very good at it in my own life, pointing the fingers at other people, the ones who drive me crazy, and the ones who I can easily say, oh my goodness, if they weren't like this, then it would be so much easier. But what about when you're the crazy person, like the mirror mm-hmm. that you, what are the clues as people kind of self-reflect here to be like, I might be the one that's really stirring dissension, or I might be the one, you know, what are some self-awareness things that would be good for us to keep in mind?
Well, I think one of them is to recognize we probably are the crazy person for somebody mm-hmm. else, mm-hmm. because the reason we're calling them crazy is it just takes us away from our set point. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing that with other people. Mm-hmm. We may not know it. One of the best ways I've found to see if I'm driving somebody else crazy is to talk to them about it mm-hmm. and say, you know what, when I did that the other day, how did that make you feel? Mm. Just to be aware. So it's not just about me where I'm saying, I hope they like me. I want to perform well. I want to do whatever.
Right.
But to have real conversations with people and say, so what drives you crazy about people?
Mm-hmm.
When I've done this before, how did you respond to that? How did you feel when I said that?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we can read their body language. We can see just the way they looked when you say something.
Mm-hmm.
And not to ignore it, just to pick up on that and say, okay, how did that come across?
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the kind of things we can do.
How often do you actually get helpful feedback for something like that? Because I find that people often go to the opposite extreme of like, oh, no, nothing. We're great. They don't want conflict. They're super passive, maybe trending towards passive aggression. Have you actually found to have some helpful conversations where people are honest with you?
I think not everybody will.
Yeah.
But if somebody actually cares about you and you care about them, there's a much better chance.
Yeah.
I mean, feedback, Ken Blanchard used to say feedback is the breakfast of champions.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we need it, but it's so hard to get it because people don't want to hurt our feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll go talk to everybody else about it.
Right.
So it's like having spinach between your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to know, but it's painful when you do. And it's your true friends that you can ask and they will tell you what's going on. So I think it starts with talking to your trusted friends,
mm-hmm.
the ones that you already have that kind of relationship with, and ask them, how am I coming across in this kind of a setting?
Hmm.
And what does that mean? What does that look like?
Yeah.
How are other people responding?
Huh.
So it's not going to be the general group of friends. It's going to be the ones I'm closest to.
Yeah. It's interesting because I was talking with a friend just last night who we don't see each other often. She's in another state, but she's visiting. And I was asking her, what her experience has been with, like, what about that person where you feel you need to share some feedback with them? Or, you know, what's a good way to say it without them immediately shutting you down? And she said, well, what's worked for me is when they actually ask me, have you noticed that this person is kind of pulling away from me, or they don't, for some reason, I don't have people inviting me to parties, or I don't, no one's including me or whatever. And she said, something I've tried to do is ask them honestly, do you want to hear what I may have to say? And then they either have to say, no, I don't want to hear what you have to say, which puts kind of the onus on them. Or they're going to say yes, and then you're going to be able to give them an honest answer.
Well, I think there's two parts on that. One of them is exactly what you said, is to ask permission.
Yeah.
Would it be okay if I shared something that I see with that? And then if they say yes, share one thing.
Yeah.
It's so easy to use that as an opportunity to say, okay, you know what? I've been keeping a list. I've got 28 things that really bug me.
I have a note in my phone, actually, on a few different people, Mike, that I'm willing to share if they ever ask. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Well, you take
good.
The big one and start with that. Give them a chance because that builds trust. And then once you build some trust with it, they may come back to you later with another one. But unsolicited feedback usually doesn't go very well.
Yeah. It's so funny. We just dealt with that on the show here where a few weeks back, where one of our inbox questions was about a friend who had someone, she said, this person's just very flat out arrogant and prideful, and it's affecting their other relationships and they're not seeing it. And I thought it was so great because our expert who answered the question said, usually in that situation, it takes God to bring them down. They're not going to be like, please tell me how arrogant I am and let me change.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes, so we have to realize that we have to release control of that, and it's going to be between them and the Lord too.
Well, a lot of time it's because a crisis happened, something where someone snubbed them or there's been a relationship problem, and that's when they come to you, and it probably is God nudging them.
Yeah.
At that point,
yeah.
Opening up something real, it's a time when they're maybe ripe for it.
Okay. So let's talk about this a little bit, too, on a more corporate level. So say, and again, we have a lot of folks in our audience who will say, oh, I just can't seem to settle on a church because it's like I go there for a few weeks and then there's just all these weirdos and there's all like I just can't find that church where I really fit in. What about when it really is the body of Christ? You're just in a small group where people are rubbing you the wrong way. All of a sudden you're serving alongside people. How do you address things when they're kind of at a more corporate, a larger level of just stuff going on in community?
That is a tough one. I think it is tough to find a church because if you start looking around, you'll see a few people that look interesting. You find the common ground, and that's what draws you to other people.
Mm-hmm.
But the longer you stay, then you start seeing the crazy people come out of the woodwork, and
And you think they're all at your church.
Well, yeah.
Or they're all.
Yeah.
And they're. How'd they all end up here?
Well, but they've gotten to know you a little bit too. And they're going, okay, I think she's a little off. And so.
All right, let's not get all that personal, Mike. Whatever.
So, okay. Well, they told me to say that. But to be able to see in that kind of a body, there's always going to be people mm-hmm. that are just different. The longer we are involved with them, the more we're going to see. So it's like, what's my purpose? Yeah. Why am I here? Why do I want a church? Is it for worship? Is it for the friendship? Is it for all of those things? It's probably all of those things. But is this the group of people that I can feel comfortable enough with because we have the same vision, the same purpose? It's not just a social thing.
Yeah.
And so in the middle of that, I think it's recognizing the real reasons, the purpose for being there, and then not trying to be friends with everybody. Just mm-hmm. can I connect with two or three and test the waters with that?
Yeah. So, Mike, tell the person listening who's like, okay, I think there's clearly some work I need to do here. I have, for some reason, I've just got a short fuse with certain people. It's maybe my coworker. It's maybe a sister. It's just whoever. What would you say, you know, tomorrow morning or as soon as they turn off this podcast, the next step, the next thing they should do to really start kind of gaining some ground, gaining some victory in this area of not being the victim, not being the blamer, not being the, but to really start seeing some noticeable freedom in this area?
You know, I think it sounds trite, but I would start with prayer mm-hmm. because it's so easy to say, yeah, we pray about it and we move on. But that really is where change takes place, because
yeah.
otherwise we're going to dip back into, you know, I could try this or why isn't this working, and we become very reflective
mm-hmm.
and that's why self-help books usually aren't that helpful
mm-hmm.
which is unfortunate because I've written five of them but it's really God working in our lives. That's where I would start. Community is another
mm-hmm.
is to begin to have those conversations and say, Lord, can you just show me,
mm-hmm.
Help me to have open eyes to see where I may need some help
mm-hmm.
and then guide me in where I go with that. I it's so easy to minimize that
mm-hmm.
because it's spiritual,
yeah.
but it's also accurate. I mean, he does guide our lives, and that's where I would start, because if I start anyplace else, I'm probably going to get frustrated. I'm going to hit a wall.
Yeah.
Now, if I start there, then it's time maybe to talk to some trusted friends.
Mm-hmm.
Just take one out for coffee and sit at Starbucks across and say, you know what? Can I bounce some things off of you? Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I've been feeling. I'm not sure where to go with this.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean they're going to give you answers. But sometimes you say, gosh, I'm just stressed. And the other person says, yeah, me too. And you both feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you a chance to connect in that way.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, prayer is such a great place to start, because it's really the only thing we do that is supernaturally activated, you know,
yeah.
in the sense of its power beyond ourselves that we have access to. So that's super cool. All right, folks, the book is People Can't Drive You Crazy If You Don't Give Them the Keys. I've been talking to Mike Bechtel. And I think this is a great opportunity for us to just, even after listening to this program, start with exactly what Mike just said. Start praying about a situation, whether it's maybe some self-awareness that you need, or maybe you just feel constantly frazzled in the group of friends you hang out with, in your work environment, at church, whatever, and start getting some insight to that. Because like Mike said, there are many things that you can avail yourself of to move ahead and gain some ground in this area. So, Mike, thank you so much.
You're
for joining
welcome.
Us. Oh, it's just you and me. It's only you and me. You Well, as we finish out the show this week, I want to reintroduce Lisa Ruman to you. She is Director of Human Resources and an HR expert. So, Lisa, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. All right. I have a good question for you here, because this is something that not only is it just a job uncertainty question, but it also involves some parents in the mix. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to weigh in on this one. Our listener says, I recently graduated from college and have been working in a new job for the last 7 months. I got an offer to take another job that pays less, but it's something I've always wanted to do. My parents are advising me to stay at this job I'm at now because they say it looks bad to employers if I move jobs too often. Should I stay at this job for security or take the risk and the pay cut for the other position?
That is definitely a tough spot to be in. Because one, yes, we do want to show some loyalty to our employer and we want to do as best we can. And being at a job for 7 months, you really are just kind of getting into it. However, you have this opportunity ahead of you, right? That you want to do. This is your dream, your goal, your passion. And kind of taking a step back, one of the things that is unique in how, I guess, the employment industry is working, so to speak, is that people are not holding jobs for 20, 30 years any longer. 3 years is really an average that most people expect. 7 months is a little bit less than that. So when you are going to make a move like that, you do want to be certain that that's the right move for you. So if you're thinking of taking that position, spend a lot of time praying about it, getting wise counsel. It doesn't mean that another employer is going to not hire you because you've only been in a job for 7 months. Oftentimes when we see people come in that have had a lot of jobs, we ask questions, why? Tell me more about that. Help me understand why you made that decision. And if you have a good enough reason, then oftentimes we're okay with that. We move on, not an issue. Your parents do, though, have some wise counsel there, because if you're taking a huge risk, then you're going to be out of a job again, or that's not the right fit the second time around, and again, you have a short-term position, then that's going to raise another red flag. So if that's a repetitive history on your resume, then that's really where employers are going to start to raise their eyebrows and question that. But at the same time, not taking the position, one, because it's lower pay, is not always something to make a decision on either, something to be thought of. But oftentimes, to get to where you want to be career-wise or really follow your heart or your passion, where you're going to really thrive, it might be a spot where you're going to be making a little less pay. Mm-hmm. So again, think through your budget, get wise counsel, speak with your parents about it. You definitely want to respect them and learn from their wisdom, but it doesn't always have to be a bad move. It could be a good move, but at the same time, it's not one to be taken lightly.
Yeah, I like that. And it's good that you made that distinction, because I see that as, I mean, obviously now they have an offer on the table, so the 7 months isn't a big deal. But like you said, if they take this and it's just on a whim, and then they're like, after 5 months, oh, no, I don't like this one either, then it is going to start building a history that doesn't look good, you know? So, I mean, yeah, this could be their restart. It could be getting into their passion, doing something that's worth giving up some pay for. But they do have to think long-term and identity capital as well, in kind of realizing, okay, what's really going to build up my skill set and make me marketable in the future as well. So those are good thoughts.
Thanks,
Lisa. All right, folks, do write to us, editor@boundless.org, with your question or just comments on the show. Or if you've been in a spot like this, maybe you could offer some encouragement for some of our other listeners as well. But, you know, we always have fun answering them, and it's great when we can bring in experts like Lisa to address your questions, and we are determined to do that. So stick with us, and we'll see you next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focused on family.